British Spy Stories. Season 3. Official Denial. Episode 4. As he nears the end of his walk up Kensington Palace Gardens, Maxime always feels a slight regret as he leaves this road of impossibly grand, cream-coloured houses and goes through the black gates at the end that lead back out to the ordinary world. He doesn't know why he loves it here so much. The scale of the buildings, the feeling of being somewhere important, maybe. And it reminds him a little of the residences on the west side of Mokhovaya Street, in the middle of Moscow. He turns sharp right along the Bayswater Road, towards Queensway Tube Station, then right again almost immediately, into the compound of the Russian Embassy's consulate section. He shows his identity card, and the guard takes too long to inspect the card, for Maxime's liking. Why the boy has to read both sides of the thing, he doesn't know. But these young men they have on the gate nowadays know nothing. He walks through the main doorway of the building and into a grand hallway. In front of him is a long central corridor and a gloriously outsized staircase pushing towards the upper floors. He takes the stairs to the first floor, walks the length of the entire building, and gives a sharp rap on the final door on the left-hand side. He hears a muffled,
"Come in,"
through the door, and turns the handle.
"Good morning, Major," he says. "Maxime, have a seat."
The man doesn't look up. Major Vasilyev is a large, round man, with grey hair cut short so that his skin shows through. His eyes are small and set in a red, saggy face that sits on top of a short neck.
"How are you, Major?"
Vasilyev stops and meets Maxime's gaze, but doesn't say anything for more than 5 seconds. This sort of behaviour from senior intelligence officers has always slightly scared him, as it often precedes bad news. After the terrifying pause, the man answers.
"As can be expected."
"That's good."
Vasilyev gives another penetrative stare and pauses again.
"Tell me about the Valentina meeting."
He puts his fountain pen down on the papers that he had been annotating.
"I think she's worried about being exposed," says Maxime. "I tried to reassure her."
"Is she right? Is there an increased risk?"
"I haven't seen a thing that says so," says Maxime.
"If she is at increased risk of exposure, you know what will happen, Maxime."
Vasilyev doesn't expand on his statement.
"That won't happen, Major. She has many years of future service to give. You're not falling for this girl, are you, Maxime? I hope you learned from what happened in Paris when you were there. It's why you were sent here, to get away from women. But you didn't stop communicating, did you? Even when she was on the other side of the channel. That girl died because you wouldn't let her go."
The Major stops and looks at him.
"Valentina and I, Agent Valentina, is a complete professional, as I am. You have nothing to worry about on that score. She's an attractive woman. Like I said, how long have you been in London, Maxime?"
11 years, Major.
Time we thought about moving you.
I'm quite happy.
I'm not sure your happiness is our main consideration, Maxime. We don't pay you good money to make you happy.
This job still gives me plenty of opportunities to support Russia, Major. And I think we need stability in the service, given what's going on. My contacts wouldn't look favourably on sudden changes in personnel.
But if Moscow says jump, to use that American phrase...
I'm sure I'm not their top priority at the moment, Major.
A slice of silence drops into the room.
"Perhaps you're right," says Vasilyev. "I need you to do something for me, though, to protect our own backs. I need you to test Valentina, to see if she is under risk of exposure. If she is, we will have to do something about it. It's in your hands, Maxime. She's your asset. You're the handler. if she is going to continue to be a route for British secrets, then Moscow needs to know she can be trusted. You and I both know what an agent is like who feels vulnerable. They can start to be erratic, start to put themselves at risk. And if they're at risk, you and I are at risk.
Vasilyev gets as close to a smile as his face will allow.
Thank you, Maxim,
he says, which is the signal for Maxim to leave. He walks back down the long corridor and out into the fresh air, then along the road and through the gates to Kensington Gardens, near the Diana Memorial. He thinks about how he will test Valentina, and hoping, with a slight desperation, that she passes. There are no clouds tonight. The sky is a black sheet over Budapest. The three spies sit at a table in the rooftop bar of the hotel, with coats pulled up around their necks, as protection against the Hungarian autumn.
I looked into Viktor Melnik, says Laravel.
Go on.
Viktor Melnik, Agent Overbeck,
she begins.
Born in Moscow, where he also grew up. In his 20s, he moved to Kyiv to take up a government position there. His father had been Ukrainian, which is one of the criteria for getting the job. This was only a decade after the end of the Soviet Union, and all those ex-Soviet states were going through a load of shit in the early years, trying to find their feet. Anyway, he worked there, and we made contact with him. Initially, it was a standard spook work by the British Embassy in Kyiv, making contact with civil servants. One of the spooks and Viktor got on very well and became friends. They would go out drinking and to restaurants with groups from the embassy. Sometime in that period, Melnik started talking to the spook about how he was becoming frustrated that Russia wouldn't let go of the country. He said he'd be interested in helping others, like the UK. The spook knew what this sounded like, and one Sunday lunchtime they went to a hotel out of town, and the spook asked him directly if he was interested in helping with intelligence gathering.
She looks up to check that her audience is still with her, and they are. Laravel can see their faces lit by the shimmers from the moonlight, bouncing off the tabletop.
So, we recruited him,
she says.
The Ukrainians knew and have shared the intel he's provided. He's been Agent Overbeck for 5 years and provided a steady stream of interesting but not vital insights into Russians in and around Kyiv.
Is he a double agent? Says Hans.
London doesn't think so,
says Laravel.
Research branch did a full deep dive twice, but nothing came up. And you know the rest, Gabby,
she says. 4 weeks ago, Overbeck disappeared from Kyiv. He was a no-show at the usual meeting with his handler. They went to his work address and flat, but nothing. 6 weeks before that, he was diagnosed with some sort of cancer, stage 3. The doctors told him that there's nothing that could be done.
So he's gone off to die, says Hans.
Maybe. We know two other things apart from all of that. Overbeck is an alcoholic. Plus, the only trace that we could find of his departure was a train ticket to come here to Budapest. We think he's come to meet someone he knows or a contact, but we don't know. Hans, I need you to start trawling the data we have on MI6 persons of interest in the city.
Okay,
he says. And we'll start searching in the bars of Budapest, Jenny. Gabby looks across at Laravel, who nods to confirm. Viktor pushes one side of his dark blonde hair back behind his ear. His watery blue eyes sit deep in a round, pale face, with 2 days' growth of beard. He's grown to like this particular bar since he moved to Budapest. The 9 bar on Kertész Street has everything he wants. A good supply of drink, not too crowded, and it has the feeling of being hidden away from everyone. No one knows him here, and that is essential. Back in Kyiv he knew too many people, and that's why he had to get out. He couldn't believe how lucky he was when he said all of this to Elena, and she immediately said that she'd come with him. A woman on one of the other tables has been looking at Victor a few times over the last hour, and he has looked back. Her hair is short and dark, and he can see her eyes are beautiful from 20 feet away. When he looks over again to where she is sitting, she stands up and walks over.
"Want to buy me a drink?"
she says. She smiles and sits next to him on the red leather seating.
"I'm Dusana."
She holds her hand out, and the bracelets on her wrist catch the lights above his head. He hesitates for a second. The four beers inside him have already created a wall of padding between his brain and the outside world. But that, of course, is the whole idea.
"Sure,"
he says quietly.
"I'm Victor."
He offers his hand and she notices he is slightly shaking. 2 hours later, there are many more empty beer bottles on the table in front of him, but only 2 empty mojito glasses in front of her. Dusana now knows about his life, but he knows barely anything about hers.
"Why did you come to Budapest, Victor?"
she says, turning her glass around on the table and staring into the middle of the remaining liquid. Her hand rests on the seat next to her. "I don't know anyone here."
"You know me?"
"Okay, I didn't know anyone here," he says, his eyes closing slightly from the beer.
"Is that what you want, to be alone?"
"There's something I haven't told you," he says. He turns to look at her properly for the first time in an hour, and notices that her eyes are grey.
"I'm not well." "Too much booze?"
"Cancer."
"Fuck, I'm sorry."
"Don't say that," he says. "It's not your fault." "It's no one's fault, is it? It just happens."
"You getting chemo?"
"I was in Kyiv, but not here."
"You need to carry on with it,"
she says. "Maybe."
"Fuck maybe, Victor. You owe it to the people who love you."
He looks at her again and watches her face as he wonders what to say.
"Promise me you'll go and see a doctor."
She puts her hand on his, and her fingers curl around his fingers.
"You have everything to live for."
"Do I?"
"Of course,"
she says. Then she sits more upright.
"I know, I'll take you under my wing. How often do you come down to this bar?"
"Twice a week, maybe 3.
"Come back on Thursday,"
she says. He nods dog-like.
"We'll talk, and we'll get you thinking about the future again. And you must go and get booked in for treatment here in Budapest. This isn't an ending, Victor. It's a beginning.